From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to be joined by Jane Lee. Jane, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice.
And it's his best so far, I would say.
And be glad in it. I love that expression. You know, like, okay, everything, stuff happened yesterday and stuff might happen tomorrow, but this is the day the Lord has made. And I tell my kids that every day. I say, you know, we... And anybody who will listen is if you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you're still here, there's a reason. Whether you're 112 years old or whether you're 2 years old, there's a reason you're here today, and God has a reason. You know, it's not, you know, you hear that sometimes. People retire or they, you know, or, well, I used to do this and that, but I just kind of sitting back now, just kind of.
Right, golden years.
Yeah, and then you see other people, regardless of how old they are, one way or the other. This is, you could be 15.
Right.
This might be your last day on earth.
Right, and there's a purpose in it. It's a purpose, and doesn't that bring you to God when you think about it?
Yeah.
It just brings you back to, I mean, how much of the self-help movement and all the slogans and everything we see all can be encapsulated in that. Today is the day the Lord made.
Right.
Wow. Just sit with that. Just ponder it. Because he renewed everything. He renewed our life. He renewed the elements, nature, the earth. It's all still here. And there's just an immense amount of faith and hope and tremendously divine power in it. Because then when we cooperate with it, when we realize it, then we become almost, we cooperate with it, we become more effective because we have a deeper communion with him.
Exactly.
More awareness. Yes, it really does. And it's funny how in our faith, which is just so rich, and the more we look at it, it's like, oh my, it just looks richer. It's like this tapestry you didn't even know more sections were there, the more intricately woven and the colors. Just one piece of scripture or the faith can open up the entire world to us, a connection with God. And so as we're heading into the Triduum and just the most sacred time and the most profound time, almost so profound that I don't know how to grab onto it. You know, how do we encapsulate? Because there's so much. And just by taking one piece of it, like we were talking about, taking one I don't like the slogan, scripture, to look at it. We just find something to go into it with. It can be completely different than any other year, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, every day is different. Every second is different. Every minute is different. But the only one we have any control over is the present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or we think we have control over it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're kind of convinced we are. So as we look at it going into Holy Thursday and taking it moment by moment, is that the Roman Missal specifies that priests should preach about three things on Holy Thursday, and never does it do that, but it does it for Holy Thursday and directs them to talk about the institution of the Eucharist, the institution of the priestly order, and the commandment to love.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know how a human priest can do that, honestly. It's pretty big, and how we can hear it and really take it in.
Yeah. And, you know, Holy Thursday, you know, when I think about the Eucharist and the institution of the Eucharist, there they are in the upper room. It's Jesus' last full day on earth, or last full day before the crucifixion. He knows what's coming. But even later in the garden, and this is where Jesus is fully human. You know, it's kind of hard to, I've had people say to me, well, yeah, he's getting crucified, but he's God, for heaven's sakes. You know, like how big a deal is that? And you go, no, he's human.
Mm-hmm.
He's human on that cross. He's really feeling it, you know. And what really tells me that he's human is in the garden, he's saying, Lord, if possible, let this cup pass. Like, hey, I know this is supposed to happen, but Do I really have to have my wisdom teeth pulled? You know, maybe maybe they don't have to come out, okay?
Right. Is there another way?
Is there another way? Can he's pleading because he knows how hard it's going to be. He's human.
Right. And that's something rough.
He's human.
Right. And our finite mind really struggles to comprehend how you can have two wills.
Yeah.
How he just doesn't slip into the divine and say, well, I'll just disconnect. Well,
yeah.
any woman going through childbirth or any husband lovingly watching her be in pain, you can't get away from it. Uh-oh. He may be divine in that he prays, but he still has the central nervous system of the human being. He's still going to feel the pain. There's no escaping that.
Yeah.
And is that listening to, and that's one of the best things about the internet, is you can put in a specific piece of a scripture and someone has spoken about it.
Yeah.
And
right.
Listening to when he said about on the cross about why have thou forsaken me? And in that moment, God didn't forsake him, but God allowed him to feel completely the human experience of in extreme difficulty, we feel that we've been abandoned.
Right.
So he had that experience. So he has the true human experience. And also, does that not connect to, and we have to do that. We can't just take one thing, one piece, and hold it by itself in its entirety. No, it's connected to everything else.
Yeah.
We know Jesus got angry. We know he cried, like when Lazarus died. We know he got angry in the temple and with the money changers. And so he had the human experiences. He allowed himself to feel pain.
Right.
And being so forlorn at Judas. And Judas was going to betray him, and he knew that, but he was going to lose Judas, and he knew that Judas would not turn back to him like Peter did.
Right.
Peter came running back. Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry. I really blew it. Was that not an example for us? And Judas didn't. He turned away. And so the grief he felt in that, so all of that ties together. He really did feel that. He did feel that. So we can't – so when his flesh is torn – and that's one of the great things about rewatching the Mel Gibson movie, because they were so articulate in showing that. And thankfully, they prayed every day, right? They went to Mass every day as they were filming that to do what God wanted them to do, so people got the reality of it. Is his flesh had nerves in it, and it tore. And it was just he felt no different than we did.
Right.
And so just taking that piece and helping us go into it. And part of the mission of God's Heart and Hands Ministry is renewing and restoring parenthood to its place in God's order. It's disordered right now. Is that putting parents back between their children and God, that they are God's heart and hands, and they have to put God back in the center. So anything that takes them back into God, that simple piece of today is the day the Lord has made, and Jesus felt the pain.
Yep.
And he took it on for us, it's still so huge, but anything we can do to connect with it, we parents are called to.
Well, those three things you're talking about on Holy Thursday, you know, the institution of the Eucharist, it would have been not easy, but so normal. Okay, here we are in the upper room. It's the end or the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye. It's been great knowing you. I'm leaving. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I don't think it's going to be pleasant. I want you guys to go out. I'm not going to be here present with you. I want you guys to go out in the world, spread the faith, and let's have a meal. And that's that.
Mm-hmm.
No Eucharist, no, just a,
right,
a human
a gathering,
goodbye.
A human, yes, yes.
You know, and yet he instituted the Eucharist for a reason. And if Jesus had a reason, I don't need any more. I don't need to know what that reason was. I just accept it.
And that in and of itself, can I take a segue real quick? Is that in and of itself, you don't need to know anything more because that's what Jesus did. And we so much are like trying to figure out the mind of God. Well, it could be this. He didn't say this. Well, I wasn't there, so I don't really know all that. No, he did it. And that's where our power as parents, and truly it's a power because it's divinely ordained, says that's all we need. Jesus did it. Any other discussion does not matter.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to, intellectualize about it and
if it's
try to understand it better.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't tell anybody else not to do it, but in my mind, I won't doubt it because I know that this is what Jesus did and this is what Jesus said. And I'm not going to try to, well, let's tear this apart. Maybe he didn't really quite mean that. When he does say, do this in remembrance of me. And people could say, see, it's symbolic. He's just saying, when you eat bread and drink wine, even have a ceremony, you know,
right.
and remember me. But he also says, take this. This is my body. Take this. This is my blood. And why you do it. Mm-hmm. And you'll have everlasting life. And those words are just indisputable. And I don't know how any, and I'm not here to knock anybody else,
right,
but I don't
right.
know how anybody really looking at it with a critical mind and an open heart could say that that's anything but real. It's not symbolic. It's real.
Didn't the Lord,
you know, I mean, we're in the midst of a Eucharistic revival for a mm-hmm. reason.
Right.
You know, that I think our bishops and cardinals and priests and everybody else have recognized that there is, with certain people, a sort of a slipping away to mm-hmm. this, well, it's symbolic, it's nice, it's a good thing to do on Sunday morning.
Right.
That this is the whole ballgame, the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just a symbol. It's not just a nice thing to do. It's Christ mm-hmm. being part of us.
Mm-hmm. And we as parents are called to stand in that breach, if you will.
Yeah.
And help our parents, help our children, adult children, and oftentimes, because we're part of a village, it truly does take a village, other people's children, even adults.
Sure.
And to address that. And did Jesus or God not see that and handle that earlier when they left, when so many of his disciples left, and he said, are you going to, and he doubled down. He let them go. No, this is real. And he turned to the remaining disciples and said, are you going to leave too?
Yeah.
So he cleared that up. Yes, it is him. It's not. And I think that's where we get into over-intellectualization, which is what we're doing. We're splitting things apart until we actually lose context. And we disregard, we slice it and push a piece away, and we find a different reason to where we're down to. No, it's the whole picture.
Yeah, well, I mean, not only did, you know, you've got Judas, of course, but even more telling to me is Peter.
Mm-hmm.
You denied Christ. Oh man, I'll never do it again. Whoop, you just did it again.
Yes.
Oh well, yes. That's I will never do it again. Fool right. me once, fool me twice, you know that expression.
Right.
You just did it again, Peter. At the most critical time.
Yes.
Not just, oh, you know, one day, do you know Jesus? I've sort of heard of him, but yeah. I don't really know him. Okay, well, just he was in the village today, and I just thought maybe you knew him. I thought maybe he was a friend of yours. Nope, don't know the guy. Kind of a irrelevant, I don't know the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He did it at critical times.
Right.
Three times.
Mm-hmm. And was forewarned about it.
And
so
was still, thou art Peter, upon this rock I shall build my church.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, as a sinner and somebody who can fall down real hard, that's very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an excuse to fail. It's not an excuse to deny Christ. It's not an excuse to do all these. Every time we do something against God's will, willfully against mm-hmm. God's will, we're denying Christ. We're denying. We're doing what Peter did. But it's comforting to know that even Peter did mm-hmm. it at the most critical time. Sometimes we beat ourselves up mm-hmm. too much, I think,
mm-hmm.
and don't accept the true forgiveness of Christ, the sacrifice on the cross. Don't really accept.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we hear that a lot in with people that are post-abortion,
mm-hmm.
that I can't forgive myself.
Right. And honestly, we know they can't.
Yeah.
And that's where they have to come to God for the grace to be able to forgive themselves.
Right.
And that's there's a bigger context to it. Yes, it is those things. And like Peter did, what did he do different than Judas? He came running back. And that is a beautiful
fast
example. Yes.
Olympic speed.
Yes, he did. And that's what that's And that's what we need to do. And maybe that's the segment we don't talk enough about the Judas aspect of it, of how, and we're kind of being that when we say, I feel unforgivable. Yes, you do need the grace, but you have to take the step. And that's what Peter did. And that's where the work of God's Heart and Hands Ministry really lies, is returning God to the center for the families and parents seeing again, pulling out of the sandstorm of today's world and materialism and consumerism, to pull back. And you are the interpreter and the mouthpiece for God, yeah, with these and other children that cross your path.
Well, and you know, I mean, the old St. Francis, you know, spread Christianity, and when, or whatever it is, you know, and when necessary, use words.
Right, speak the gospel. Yes.
The to me, the A number one thing you can do as a parent is live by example. For your kids, mm-hmm, and for your kids' friends, and for your, you know,
the kids' friends, especially, I would say with my kids, that was so influential. Yeah, Mom, you're doing it, but all these others are not.
Right.
And that really undermined what I was trying to do, just to hold the right thing, and the other parents were making compromises that had bigger impacts. And that's huge. I just want to call on parents to remember that. That's profound.
I mean, I can preach all I want to my kids about the Eucharist and about the God and everything else. And then on Sunday morning, I'm watching the 49er game instead of going to Mass.
Right.
The words become pretty empty.
What's that saying? I can't hear what you're saying because what you're doing speaks so loudly.
Right.
Yes, they notice quite a bit. And unfortunately, we parents right now are very distracted by the happy little screen we have in our hands, and how often in coffee houses and restaurants. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, the dad was on the phone, and the little 8-9-year-old boy was just sitting there looking around, wishing for a conversation.
Well, the one I see people all the time, you know, that's, they're pushing the stroller with one hand.
Uh-huh.
And there's a bird on a bush there. There's, you know, there's
right,
blossoms on the trees. There's, mm-hmm, all this stuff happening. The other hand's got the phone.
Right, right. You know, or they're looking at the screen, yes.
Or they're looking at the screen.
And I would offer, having been a parent, and you, as you as well, it's boring. It's mundane. It really is at times. But I've come to understand that that's the perfect balance for how profoundly, divinely anointed it is of critical importance. We need that mundane to balance the fact that we're molding lives and souls here. If it was that critical all the time, we'd get no rest. But we need that rest of the birds and being outside, and we have to look. We have to be in our children's world. We have to look at the children's world, so we see what they're seeing, and so we respond to them. Are they seeing the screens now in the cars? Oh Lord, can kids get away from screens? But they don't look at. And I'm really grateful that a teacher did a parent evening decades ago when my kids were little, and this was only with TVs. Screens were not even in children's lives then. But with that TV, it's like having a stranger sitting in your living room. If you leave the room, you don't know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
And it just opened my eyes, like, wow, we really have to pay attention to what comes across on that screen. And now we know through enough of medical research, it's actually changing how their brains are formed. Sure. I see it as a math tutor. I can be with a kid and tell you how much of a screen they have in their life because of their attention span, because of how they want to be entertained versus educated. If they can read word problems and interpret it and draw images from it and portray an image in their mind or draw it, because we're losing all of that in our children now because they're getting so many images, and the images are happening so quickly or changing so quickly, the brain's actually relaxing, saying, okay, I don't need to do this. I don't have to read words and form an image because everything is given to me. And so this, as parents, and seeing ourselves as God's heart and hands, it completely changes our paradigm of raising a family. And as we go through difficulties and heading into Easter weekend, pick a thread, pick a moment. It's not the hoopla. It's not the big meal. It's not the Easter egg hunt. That is all peripheral to the, I don't even know how to describe it. It's so profound. That's all peripheral, but that's become center stage. And meanwhile, the Lord waits quietly. And it doesn't mean in the next 24 hours you have to have a major change of faith, but pray for that thread, that peace that God's going to give you for your family to get reoriented. and see God in the moment of however much you're able to participate. Because it's hard to participate in the 3 days, the 4 days with young children. But whatever God called you to, yeah. Or maybe by doing the readings and maybe looking at they have shows now on YouTube that are little documentaries that animate that sort of thing.
Right.
Anything to open up the discussion, like you do so well with your children, is opening up that discussion. And so with the Eucharist, get your own head in the right place. Yeah. Get your own faith. And if, what's it now, close to 80% of Catholics don't believe in the real presence, I'll tell you what, pray to know. Put your effort out there. Lord, I'm not seeing it. I'm not getting it. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to open my heart to you. That's the most profound. And that's going out in faith. And that's all he's asking for us to do,
yeah.
Not knowledge, but to step out in faith. And all of these things, and science and religion, and the battle they go on in the Eucharist especially, it's never going to be 100%. And the scripture debates that we were talking about earlier that people have when they peel away and shave away at scripture and how it's really not the presence. See, it's this, it's only a symbol, is God will. I've understood that God will never make it 100%. He will never make it such that we don't have to have faith, because that takes him out of the picture. We will, whether it's a pixel on the screen of faith or it's only a pixel of knowledge and the rest is faith,
okay.
He will always remain in the picture. Anything else is putting us, is removing him and putting us as, well, we decide. Well, we know. Well, it's our choice. No.
Faith is a gift too. You know, grace is a gift. It's easy. People tend to pat themselves on the back when they come to some truth or something.
Yeah, we do, because we forget, the Lord's been giving it to us and the people in front of us the whole time.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And parents are called on. It's a harder time because society is not backing up parents. We're reaching over and getting into parenthood saying, we're making decisions for you and we're keeping decisions from you. And as your child's sorting through things, we're going to be the ones they consult with, not you. And so parents have got to renew that. Even going back to running to the Eucharist, going, Lord, you've got to help us here. This is crazy. How did all this get involved with my parenting these children? And it was subtle, and it took a long time, but it's there. But through the grace of God, we can step up, put ourselves back in the middle, because then he can use us, right? I've been waiting for you, because we're the peace between the children and God. So when we step back into the middle, even if we don't know the solution, He will work through us, right, and protect us and protect our children and so on.
Indeed. Jane, you always bring us some good scriptural references.
Uh-huh. And about the Holy Thursday in the institution of the Eucharist, St. John Vianney? 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 I've heard it pronounced both ways.
I've always heard Vianney.
Vianney, thank you. I want to do it justice.
You know, I just know it's a parish in Rancho Cordova.
It's a lovely church, too. I frequent it quite often. He said, there is nothing...
Are there any churches that aren't lovely?
That's true. Yes, I didn't mean
really,
to disparage.
No, it's really funny, though.
That's true.
Because I'll say that. I'll say, I was in this wonderful parish. What a beautiful church. And then I say, you say that about everything, Bob. and then I realize it, because it's really...
Because they're all different.
I remember being in St. Bernard's, which is a mission church up in the foothills in the town of Volcano.
Wow.
And just this cutest little church. And there was a church in Stonyford, which is a mission of, I think, of Maxwell, you know. And it was just the tiniest church. And it had blackberry bushes growing all around the outside of the church.
Oh.
You know. And then you're in, you know, the great cathedrals,
mm-hmm.
and the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament,
yes.
You know, here in Sacramento.
Takes my breath away. Yes.
And all of them, the little church I grew up in Davis, which is now Newman,
mm-hmm.
It's just brick with the bell and,
uh-huh.
You know, and just like the little church in the Dell, you know.
That's true.
We have a framed picture of some country church up the valley somewhere. Just, you know, the white clapboards and those things touch my heart. Any place where people gather to praise God, to praise Jesus, it's a beautiful place.
That's true. What do they say about doing it in the home when they used to have mass in the homes and do it?
Yeah.
So St. John, there, a quote from him about the Eucharist, "There's nothing so great as the Eucharist. If God had something more precious, he would have given it to us."
No, that's so well said. It's what I've been thinking about this week is, why did Jesus give us the Eucharist? Why didn't he just say goodbye? Why didn't you just say, it's been nice knowing you? And I don't say it flippantly, but just like...
Right. You're looking deeper.
You know, whether somebody is dying, somebody's going away to college, somebody's moving to another, you know, this has all been, you know, the company's dissolving and you're having a final meeting, whatever. And this is why Jesus came to earth, and this is basically his final act with his disciples, is to give him the Eucharist and to tell them, do this in remembrance of me. This is my body. This is my blood. There's obviously a profound and huge, that's the whole ballgame, reason that he did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could have said anything. He could have given them the sign of the cross and said, do this in remembrance of me.
Right.
And that was, and we would do that in remembrance of him. But it was something that was even rejected. I mean, like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? This is your body? This is your blood? Ooh, it's kind of strange.
Right.
I mean, the fact that it was strange, and he could have picked any means. He could have picked a means that made them all stand up and cheer.
Right.
He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wouldn't you want to make people happy on the final day? Like, well, ultimately he was, but...
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it wasn't something, that's great. That's great. On this day, from now on, we'll...
So what have you... What
we'll
have
eat
you...
birthday cake.
Right. So in thinking about it and pondering and putting this together...
It tells me it's true.
Oh. Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And it's... So thinking about what you're saying then is... It brings in my mind that it was, he knew we were going to need something tangible. He knew how we are as humans, like Peter.
Knew that somehow this was necessary.
Yes.
In a way we don't understand. I can't even understand why was it necessary for Jesus to die on a cross?
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't it just necessary for him to come to, and preach the gospel?
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a long, wonderful life and died, you know.
But he
preached the gospel. He spread, as many people have preached the gospel, but they weren't deity. But St. John the Baptist, any great person in history, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Francis, everybody, they all, in their own way, did great things to spread the faith. St. Paul, for heaven's sakes, Peter, all of them. But, and even the modern day people, but Jesus, I don't know why he had to die on the cross.
Well, we just know intellectually, but we don't know that he
had to.
And he said he did.
Yeah.
And he said he did. Right.
You know, so that's enough.
Yes.
But that's the first question I'm going to ask.
We do know that things will be revealed later. We do know that. And so we have to take what he gave us and listening to what you're saying and really pondering it and putting it together in all the pieces. He knew we were going to need basic sustenance. And what more than tying it to a basic human need of eating? And that ties us together socially and spiritually. And then also looking ahead, because we know that God saw what we were going to be doing throughout all of time. It cannot be distributed impersonally or through a machine.
Right.
We can never remove that component.
Right.
So he saw all the difficulties of everything that was going to go on, and that he knew we would need it. And I marvel at the fact that when I go to Mass in the morning versus when I don't, it's a different day. There's a different feeling. There's a different sense. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what kind of grace it is or blessing. And I don't know if it's because I dragged myself out of bed before dawn in order to get there. If it's that grace from making that sacrifice. But it is different when we do it. So there is something to it but it comes down to faith. He right. said it, I'm going to do it. I've met people that over-intellectualize and bring the history and bring all these things. He said it. Really, it comes down to the bumper sticker. He said it. That's all I need. And so looking ahead into everything that in Holy Thursday, that the Last Supper encompassed, the not just the institution of the Eucharist, but also the priestly order that he ordained. And so these priests at the Last Supper, these apostles at the Last Supper had their first communion and priestly ordination. What a night.
It was the quickest seminary ever.
Actually, would you say it was 3 years long? I don't know. Well, yeah. They didn't realize it, though.
They didn't go to St. Patrick's or Mount Angel or anywhere.
No, and here they were. And that's one of the most profound moments at the end of I think it may have been the Passion of the Christ movie or one of the other really good movies, is the 12 of them disperse at the end. The magnitude of the earth and six pairs of people walking to go do this. Talk about liking small numbers and God being able to work the biggest out of the smallest.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at all the travels of St. Paul and you think, he never took a plane. He never took a speedboat.
No.
He never took a subway. He never took an Uber. He never,
none of that.
Wow. It's just, it's amazing.
How far they went.
How people got, got around.
Right. And it still did. And talking about the priesthood is that St. John Vianney said, if I were to meet a priest and an angel, I should salute the priest before I saluted the angel. The latter is the friend of God's, but the priest holds his place.
Oh, wow.
And then St. Bernardine of Siena, this is beautiful, it goes with it. The power of the priest is the power of the divine person. For the transubstantiation of the bread requires as much power as the creation of the world. Wow, just sitting with that in the moment. He did. He's transforming human into divine. Something out of nothing, kind of.
I wonder if transubstantiation has ever been used in any other context. I mean, I've never heard that word used other.
No, I've only heard it in the faith.
Yeah.
What a powerful word. And how long it took us to learn it.
It would be interesting to research that word.
It would.
If it once meant something, or if it was just literally not a made-up word. It's obviously trans, change,
right.
convert or something,
right.
substantiation. But I've never heard that word used in any other context.
No.
I've heard bread used in another context, or I've heard wine used in another context, but not cup. But not transubstantiation.
It's a powerful world. It holds a lot for us. It really does. And in talking about the priesthood, from Father Sebastian White said, the priesthood and the sacraments are precisely how we have direct access to and contact with the Lord. So going back to what your question is, why the Lord did that and to give us his body and blood, in that. And by giving it to his first priests, he's continued his presence on the earth. There was never a gap when he was not on the earth from when he was born. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So when he died, he had given his body and blood to his apostles. So it continued. And maybe that the chain of grace, if you will, the path of grace has continued the entire time. And so how powerful the priesthood looks, understanding that if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have access to that contact with God, to the graces that the sacraments give us.
You also wonder why washing the feet isn't a sacrament. It's so powerful. It is so, of all the things to wash the feet, and it's so humble in a very good way,
It's pure love. It really is. To humble yourself to do that.
I'll let you read the.
Oh, in John 13:14. If I, therefore, the master and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. I have given you a model to follow so that as I have done for you, you should also do.
And that, of course, we see this on Holy Thursday.
Right. And it is a commandment. I mean, you listen to that. There's no ambiguity. I've shown you how to do this. You should.
Yeah. And it's more than wash the feet. I mean, it's symbolic of serve.
Mm-hmm. Humility.
Serve others.
Tending to others.
Without regard for who you are and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You're the CEO and you just hired this person. No, you're washing their feet.
It occurs to me that's very much like parenthood with babies. We are serving them. Doesn't
right.
matter what our title is, what our right. accomplishments are. We are serving them in that moment.
Right.
And I've long thought that parenthood, in any capacity, whether it's a step-parent, a foster parent, and every other picture of parenthood that we have, is the one of the, if not the highest spiritual calling, because it is such an act of humility and setting aside from all of your temporal wants, your
yeah.
sleep, a shower, a hot meal, you know, being able to finish a sentence, finish a cup of coffee. Everything is disrupted when you have children. And I wonder in some way if that's part of the running away from the responsibilities that we have, what we're seeing, and that all the distractions and everything else. Yeah, those look a lot more, those are a lot nicer, because parenthood is one tough job. Because it's persistent.
Well, it is. It's ever changing,
mm-hmm.
and it's not in the manual. And,
no.
And even people who have studied it forever and give advice, whether in the newspaper or on the couch or
right.
whatever, people who are experts in the field have great disagreements about. What's the best way
mm-hmm.
to raise a kid? What's the best way? And part of that is, I think most people in those fields are well-meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And sometimes, I don't know, misguided is the right word, but sometimes advice is not good.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the advice is good, but it doesn't take.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work.
Right. It's a unique situation we have typically.
And it's every situation is different. Your kid can go off to school happy as a clam and come home in tears
mm-hmm.
for something that happened at school, something a teacher said, something three friends wouldn't
right.
eat lunch with her or him.
Right.
And you're like, well, honey, you're talking to a 9-year-old who got dissed at lunchtime.
Right.
You know, or on the playground or
right.
anything that happened.
Mm-hmm. And their world is shaken.
You know, and you think, well, it's just, you know, they fall and scrape their knee. You're going to,
mm-hmm.
you know, spray it
That's
with something
easy,
and
right.
put a bandage on it and let them know that you love them. But when something has hurt their heart.
Mm-hmm.
Or their brain, that's a lot. It's a lot tougher, and you don't see it coming.
No.
And there's really not, anything that there are no magic words.
Mm-mm.
And every kid will respond differently.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, you say, well, those aren't really your friends if they treat you like that, and you
right.
need to find friends that won't treat you that way. Well, some kids that might work with other kids are. Going to focus on
right.
what happened and yeah, you're right. Parenting's the toughest job in the world.
Right, and you're speaking to the complexity of just that one scenario,
yeah.
depending on the personalities involved and everything that's going on in that child's life. I remember my mom saying in the 50s and 60s there was one book on parenting, and that was Dr. Spock, and that's all there was.
Yeah.
And now
the
we
same
have...
guy that was on the
yes. Yeah. The sci-fi. Yes,
yeah.
It's kind of gone to a sci-fi level. You look at all the parenting magazines
yeah.
and all the parenting books. We're over educating ourselves when there is an innate sense of how to parent.
Yeah.
And we have community, and we have these things called grandparents, and we've done it all without all of that. And I would offer that seeing ourselves and reminding, not really just seeing us, but reminding ourselves that we are God's heart and hands. No child is created without God agreeing to it. We
yep.
may think we've got the power of choice, but it had to be there in the first place because of God.
Yep.
And because of just the numbers of it wasn't conceived a month before or a year before. It was conceived exactly right then for a reason. And so then when we have to look at the bigger picture, and we as parents just remind ourselves we are God's heart and hands, and that he will give us what we need. And it's either people, family, and how often, how much did parenting give you calluses on your knees from praying for your children? It does it to everyone. And how often in the most difficult prayers that I was going through when my children were young, there would be a knock at the door somehow. And there was always something on the other side of that door that was exactly what I needed to help in that situation, whether it was an invitation for coffee because I needed relief, or it was an invitation of, here, I have this extra. Oh, my gosh, that's exactly what I was looking for. But allowing God in the picture, when we allow God fully in the picture, he's not going to abandon us.
Nope.
And I think that's why it's so profound in the Eucharist, like what you were saying earlier. Why did he continue the thread of being on earth, the divine presence? Why was that continued? And why doesn't really matter. The fact is that he did, and we know it. And looking at the preponderance of Eucharistic miracles, I just recently bought the book from all the Eucharistic miracles. And every page is a different Eucharistic miracle, and it's like 300, 400 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And there's probably more than that. And it's probably a subset of all that have happened. But he keeps showing us, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. I'm here for you. I have you. And I've got your back. Just call on me. But because parenthood is such a big job.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's just like the struggle's over. I died on the cross. You won.
Wow,
you won.
Right. We've won. Right. The rest is just a mirage. And I'm telling you, I'm going to win anyway in the end. So don't worry. But also in looking at in the commandment to love by washing each other's feet, there's a profound connection in that. And did he not show us by his humanness coming down off of, he was divine, but he came to us fully as human.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't let some magical thing happen and wash their hands. He did it as a human being. And how profound that was. And in John 13:17, if you understand this, blessed are you if you do it. So he still knew that, even though he says in John 13:14, three lines earlier, you should also do this. And then in 17, he says, you are blessed if you do it.
Yeah.
Because he still knows we have the Peter component. we still run away going, no, I hear you, but no, this is too much. I can't do it. So as parents, when we go into this weekend, and if Easter morning is when we're able to step foot in church, is let ourselves be still in the moment. Set the clock for 60 seconds, just 60 seconds. Before you walk into Mass, or sit in the car for 60 seconds and have complete quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And have the whole family sit there, even 30 seconds, and say, okay, kids, we're going to be quiet in the car for 30 seconds before we go into Mass.
How many kids are in the car?
A lot. And they're bubbly. But then you're taking that moment to say, what we're going into is sacred. We're going into a sacred space. This is sacred ground. Jesus is there in the tabernacle, and we're going to settle ourselves. Okay, maybe just 15 seconds now, thinking of the reality of it, because there's a 2-year-old and maybe a 4-year-old in there, you know, and they're antsy. But that piece of just taking the moment, even a few seconds, to say, we're going to have quiet. We're showing them, we're framing for them what it is to walk in and to have that sacred space. How different that is. Because so much, like you said earlier, how much we model it. So yes, we are on the merry-go-round. It's a crazy merry-go-round in a sandstorm right now. There's so much.
But
it's,
would you do it all over again?
Oh, 10 times over.
Yeah.
10 times over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I had a kid that wasn't in any parenting books. And I will just say that. But
are there any that are?
Yeah, actually, it sure seems to be from what I see on the outside. But then I have to say that some, but then when you get on the inside, they're completely different. It always does that. The grass is always greener. However, there are kids that are more taxing and more unpredictable, you know, or kind of, and or maybe it was just me. We don't know.
Well, you know, but, you know, the other thing is we tend to, and I look at my six kids, and they're all enormously different from each other, which I really cherish.
Mm-hmm.
mostly because it means I didn't force them to be, or my wife and I didn't force them to be some certain way in terms
of. And that's huge. You let God run, mold them. You let them have that.
Because their genetics are obviously different from each other. Mm-hmm. And yet I think there's a fallacy sometimes in, well, this kid was great because they never had any behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. They were never sassy. They did well in school. They went to college or whatever. They played on the sports teams, or they
more
were in the choir.
Right.
You know, they just did everything right. You know, they were polite, on and on and on. And then you got one that's not rebellious, but just has different issues, maybe struggles more in school, and as a result doesn't have as many friends, doesn't have all these things that they all manifest each, you know. Mm-hmm. And but they're all the ones who are just easier, where you don't have to do as much. They get up and get dressed by themselves, and they get off to school on time, as opposed to the one that's just chronically late.
Right.
You know, chronically, as you're rushing out, did you brush your teeth? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Which goes on right into the teenage years, gets worse even in the teenage years. And so you say, well, that kid was more difficult than this kid. That kid isn't as successful as this kid, but not necessarily.
No, not necessarily.
At all. You know, they just are manifesting things differently.
Right. I think we all get, and I've noticed in families, you'll get a child that makes you think you're good at parenting.
Yeah.
And you get a child that makes you think you should have stuck to goldfish, not even puppies, because goldfish, it's in a bowl. You don't have to worry about walking it. You know. Yes, I think we do that. It's humbling. It's humbling. But enough of it, God gives us enough confidence that we stay in the game, but to understand that he needs somebody to take those children. And I really have come to understand through tremendous amounts of prayer that sometimes when you've got a child that's going to take more, it's not that I was that much more capable, but he knew I would turn to him, you know, and remembering that he couldn't handle his first two kids either. They completely went against him, Adam and Eve, you know.
Yep.
He's like, go make your way in the world. But we say that in jest, or I say it in jest, but it is. Parenting is a really tough job, and we have to cut ourselves slack, but also really draw God into it, because it's going
to
make it.
So you're saying God didn't turn to Spock? With Adam and Eve?
That'll be one of the questions when we get there. So now when you look back, what do you think happened with your teenagers?
Yeah.
But it really is. It's a humbling experience. And that thing you said about more successful, being in education for over 25 years, how we define success is part of the sandstorm parents are in right now. Because we've narrowed what we define success as, and we've really removed most of the context. Because when you have someone that may fit a box, they don't fit all the other boxes.
Well, schools, you hear it all the time. X percent of this high school goes on to college.
Right.
It seems to be the number one. I don't think I've ever talked to a high school administrator that wasn't, you know, let's. And this is one of the reasons I really like our Catholic schools is no, our number one goal here is to get everybody to heaven.
That's right. You know, that's right.
I heard, I forget where it was. I was talking to somebody. They were the superintendent of schools in Monterey, at Diocese of Monterey, of the Catholic schools. And she said that. In an interview. I said, so what are the goals there? And I've heard it, obviously, from our superintendents as well, you know. But it was the first time I had heard it. It was years ago. You know, your goals to get them to all heaven? That's, you know, like, I almost laughed. That's so simple.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the goal.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, the corollaries to that are, make them good human beings. Make them.
See, it's all the corollaries that are the most important part.
Exactly.
I mean, not the most important part, but are so hugely important.
Right.
Because that's where we can put meat on the bones.
Yeah.
How do we get them to heaven? All the corollaries.
You'll see so many. There's so many private schools too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about Catholic. I don't. For some reason, I don't think of the Catholic schools as private schools.
Okay.
You know, private has that kind of a sense of exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of private schools too. that's, I mean, they're college prep. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that's why you're sending your kid there is, you know, mm-hmm. because you're going to get them into Harvard or Princeton or, mm-hmm. or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, like that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's nothing the matter with that being a goal,
mm-hmm.
but, who they are and how they're going to respond to the world and how they're going to mm-hmm. go out in the world and be a servant.
Right.
That's way more important.
Right. And having been face to face with so many students over the past decades, being a private math tutor, understanding that the environments that they're educated in that don't have that to get them into heaven, they've got the secular success, but then keeping in contact with them later on, where's their foundation when things get so difficult? They don't have that foundation of faith to fall back on most times.
Right.
But when we infuse it with them through education, then when it gets most difficult or most unpredictable, and that can be its own difficulty, but not something that they've predicted was going to happen, that's when that us trying to get them into heaven, all those corollaries, all the faith-based things, the prayers, the discussions, the lives of the saints, the stories, the history, all of the doctrine, that's where we gave them, that's where those tools show up. Not it's while it's simple to say get them to heaven, it's everything underneath that gives them the tools and the sacred view as they move through life. Right. That's how we get them to heaven.
Right.
Is because they're going to use, and they don't always use it, but we have to give it to them. And if we don't, then they have almost nothing. They have to turn now and go search for it. And as my son was leaving for college and that threshold moment where he's moving out into the world and it's, you know, he's looking at you and it's that, what are you going to say? And just that Holy Spirit prayer that we just shoot up as a parent because you want those words to be meaningful. Even though you're going to see him again, you want that to be meaningful. I said, the only thing I will come back and haunt you for is if you do not use your gifts to serve humanity.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's called to do, and that's what I am as a parent is called. You have to serve God. You have to serve humanity because your gifts are unique, and they're given to you for none other than that. Everything else will come of its own.
Yeah.
And so you're getting back to success. That's how we have to define success. And just making everything college bound, we're also cutting our noses off to spite our faces as a society because we need the trades. We need the arts. Yep. And we're saying that no, unless you do technology or sciences, you're not going to have a job. You're not going to be able to buy a house. You're not. Rather than if everybody did what God designed them to do, there's a CEO that would go drive a trash truck. And there's a trash truck driver that would have no problem running that corporation right. in 40 hours and still be home with his family by 6
o'clock.
Well,
you know, and that's serving humanity is, you know, it's, well, I'm going to wait until I've got a lot of money and
right.
and my house is paid for, and then I'll be a philanthropist, you
right.
know. No, it's an everyday thing, no matter when, whether you're in high school, whether you're in college.
This is the day the Lord has made
exactly.
to do that.
Yeah,
right?
And you will have 100 opportunities today to engage somebody
mm-hmm.
and in a million different ways, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's in the grocery store, whether it's driving a car, whether it's
right.
going for a walk.
It's the homeless guy in the corner with the sign that meets
exactly,
your eye,
exactly.
that meets your eye, just waving in a smile. You can just see it in them. You can just see it in their face. Just that, you're right, it's 100 ways. And if we look for it, we will probably see 100 ways.
Yeah.
100, holding the door open for someone, going into the bank, not being on your phone, addressing the teller. How are your customers today? Everybody being nice? Just asking them that. I see on your side, you're in the toughest job possible. You're in customer service.
How do you, with a smile on your face, say, you're telling me I have no money in my account?
Oh, I love it because I say, well, I'm just going to go home and print more. I'll be back.
Yeah.
And that look on their face, because I can say it deadpan, and they're, okay, is that real? Should I be concerned
when you
come
back?
Well,
you know, you go to the grocery store and they'll hold up the $20 bill and they put a magic wand on it. And I do. I'll say the same thing. I say, I just printed them.
I know.
Should,
it's
shouldn't
good.
Be a problem.
It's good. But, you know, they get that moment of, oh, my gosh, do I have to worry about this? And I made them laugh. I brought God to them because I brought joy to them.
Yeah.
You know, or just commiserating.
Or they call the FBI on you. One or the other.
Well, that'll be another show when you tell us that story. But just being able to say, how are your customers? And identifying, How I'm really sorry that the customer, because sometimes they'll open up and it's quite heavy. And I like, and just by saying, I'm really sorry because I know you can't do anything, then humanly they kind of exhale, and humanly you made a connection to let them know, oh, it's another human being took a moment to see my humanness.
Right.
And that's getting them into heaven, I would offer too, because we're reminding them.
Well, yeah,
them.
That's it's not just get your own kids into heaven.
No, it's reminding them of God. What is it? Preach the gospel, if necessary, use words. In that moment, that's what we're doing.
Even get your enemy into heaven.
That's quite a challenge for us. And then it also takes grace. We pray about it, and he gives us an opportunity to do that, doesn't he? It comes up.
Wouldn't it be? I mean, you imagine the worst person you've ever encountered in your life, and you're going, okay, root for them to get to heaven.
Mm-hmm. As someone said to me once, and it was so perfect, that if we're supposed to learn how to do that, God's going to bring someone to you for you to learn it. Ow. Okay, so I really do have to learn it because this is so hard. Yeah. And then the flip side is, am I that to someone else?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly
boy,
right.
Boy, is that humbling? But to think of that, oh, I might possibly be that person's lesson to get into heaven.
Yeah, I mean, it's an old cliche, but it's true. You know, the hater is the one that gets eaten up by hate. True. The person you're hating probably doesn't even know about it.
No.
You know, they're just going on merrily with their life, and you're just consumed.
That's true.
And it's
every
destroying
thought.
You.
Right.
You know.
Right. And how do we, and we go through that, but we have to, like, see ourselves as God's heart and hands as parents, is to be present in the moment to see that, oh, I see the thread.
Right.
I see it in my neighbor. Okay, so I'm going to take a moment and talk to them some more and help them. And so if we, when we get, and it's not so much seeing ourselves at it, that's how God made parenthood.
Right.
We are the link between he and his children, and then we just have to renew our position.
Jane, always a joy.
Thank you. Happy blessed Easter.
Happy and blessed Easter to you.
Thank you.
And everyone you love.
Yes, thank
and
you.
And everyone in the world. That's going to do it for us for today. Easter blessings to everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio at scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio at scd.org.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through.